And as we look at these final verses in Haggai chapter 2, I want you to imagine this scene. Imagine you've decided you want to get a new carpet in your living room because someone left muddy footprints all over the old one you had. And so you call someone in to fit a new carpet in your living room. For sake of argument, let's just say this person's called Adam. So Adam comes to fit this new carpet. You shut him in your living room with a cup of tea and let him get on with the work. And after a bit of time has passed, you hear some very concerning noises coming out of the living room. So you go and knock on the door and you say, "Is everything okay?" And Adam shouts back, "Yeah, it's fine. I've got everything under control." So you go and make another cup of tea and sit down and enjoy it. And after a bit longer, you hear some more concerning noises coming from the living room. So you go again, knock on the door, and this time Adam opens the door a bit, but you can't actually see what's going on inside. But he says, "Don't worry, I've got everything under control." He closes the door, and you go and have some more biscuits. And then after some more time has passed, you hear some even more concerning noises coming from the living room. So you decide this time you're just going to go into the living room. It is your house after all. So you open the door and you go in, and Adam sees you coming in and says, "Don't worry, I've got everything under control." And as you look at your living room, to be fair, he has laid the carpet. It's a nice new carpet, that's all sorted. But you also, all of the plaster is coming off the walls, and there's lots of exposed electrical wires all over the place, and one of the windows is smashed, and there's a small goat running around. Is that maybe the point to which you wonder if Adam really does have everything under control? Well, that's, I think, the kind of situation we might feel that we're in as Christians at the moment. Nothing to do with small goats, but we're in a situation where God says to us again and again through his word that he's got everything under control. It's one of the big messages of the Bible, because he is God, the God over everything, who made everything. And he tells us again and again that he's got everything under control. This world is under his control, our lives, the church, his people gathered together. But then we can look around us and we can see some things that perhaps concern us or trouble us, some unnerving noises coming out from the living room. That we see, well, we've got COVID-19 is an obvious one. You may have heard about it. It's the reason why most of us today are not in this building, but in our homes. And those of us who are here, we're not able to speak to each other as we'd want to or do what we'd want to during the week. And then even beyond this pandemic, we look around us and we continue to see situations where injustice goes unpunished, where abuse is being covered up, sadly, sometimes even in churches. And we look around us at the world and we see many places where our brothers and sisters are being violently persecuted just because they name Jesus as their Lord, facing imprisonment and attacks and even death just for following Jesus. And we can look around at all of those things, the pandemic and injustice and abuse and persecution, and we know God tells us that he's got everything under control. But wouldn't it be nice if it felt a bit more like everything was under control? Wouldn't it be good if it felt a bit more like everything was under control? If you ever have those kind of thoughts or doubts as a Christian, you're not alone, because we see throughout the Bible people asking questions about how we can understand the world around us in light of this message that God is in control and has everything under control. And when we have those kinds of doubts and questions, it can be hard, can't it, to be confident in the building work that we've been called to, this spiritual building work that we've thought about over the last 5 weeks. Not physical putting bricks on top of each other, but that we're called together as a spiritual temple, as God's people, as a church, to build each other up, to encourage each other, to serve with the gifts that God has given, and to reach out into the area around us and the world with this good news of Jesus. Today we're going to find some encouragement, I hope, for that building work and for our lives more generally by looking at someone called Zerubbabel, who we found him throughout the book of Haggai. But at the end of this book, our attention is focused specifically on this person, Zerubbabel. We've had these five dated messages that have come from Haggai. That's why we've looked at it in five parts. They've all come in the second year of Darius, the king of Persia, which we would know as 520 BC. And the last two messages both come on the same day. The second of those, which we find in verses 20 to 23, is very specifically addressed to this Zerubbabel, governor of Judah, son of Shealtiel. But it's a message that's meant to be overheard. It's a message not just for Zerubbabel, it's a message for all of the people then, and a message for us as well. The encouragement of looking at Zerubbabel. So let's think a bit about the good news of this person, Zerubbabel, and why Haggai would want us to look to him today. Well, before we get to the good news, here's the problem. A long time before this, God had spoken to someone called David. Now, David wasn't just a someone, he was in fact king. And God spoke to David, the king, and said to him, this is in 2 Samuel 7 if you're making notes, from verse 12, "When your days are fulfilled, and you lie down with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring after you, who shall come from your body, and I will establish his kingdom. He shall build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever." A promise to King David that from David's line, David would be the start of a royal line. From his line would be a greater king whose throne would be established forever. And again in the Bible, through the history of God's people, that kind of promise was repeated. That here was David's royal line, this kingly line, and from it would come an even greater king who would rule over a kingdom of peace forever. We get some of those promises at Christmas. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and his name will be Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. It's building on this promise that God spoke to David, this great king who will come, and of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end. The people have heard those promises, and then they look around them in Haggai chapter 2, and they don't have a great king. They don't even have a mediocre king. They don't even have a bad king. They don't have a king, or at least not a king from their people. They have Darius the king, the Persian king. All they have is a governor. And we're not even really told what this governor is doing or what kind of authority he has. He's just Zerubbabel, governor of Judah. And so they're subject to the authority of the king of Persia, who at the moment is okay with them building a temple, but that could change. And there are other kings around who wouldn't be so happy with them building a temple. And as they go on, they'll face other people who are not so friendly towards them. So imagine those people in Haggai chapter 2 thinking, well, yeah, the temple is good. It's good we can build a temple. But are we ever going to experience that peace under that king that God promised? Are we ever going to experience that peace? The God who made those promises of a king, is he actually in control here? And if he is, well, it'd be nice if we could feel a bit more like things were under his control. You see how the people in Haggai were asking the kind of questions that we might be asking at the moment. Then we come to verse 23, which gives us one very important and amazing description this Zerubbabel, governor of Judah. Well, we're told in verse 23 something very important and amazing about him. We're told in verse 23 that he is the son of Shealtiel. Now, I can see from the top half of the faces of people in this room that you're not particularly amazed at that fact, that Zerubbabel is the son of Shealtiel. In fact, we've been told it a number of times. Have you noticed as we've been going through that every time we get, or almost every time, we get Zerubbabel, who's the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jehozadak? Well, later on, when you go home, you'll read 1 Chronicles 3. It's one of those chapters that's just a list of names, a lot of names. Specifically, the names of people descended from, can you guess, David. And there you'll find Shealtiel and Zerubbabel, here the son of Shealtiel. But this Zerubbabel is from that royal line of David, that royal line that God promised a great king would come from. And to this one who is from that royal line that God made great promises to, well, God says, I will make you like a signet ring. More amazing words that, again, we might not be amazed by because we don't have signet rings. But a signet ring was something that a king would wear, and he would stamp important documents to show that they came with his authority. A bit like we might use a signature to show that we authorize something, that this is, yes, this is what we're saying, this has our authority behind it. So if God is saying that he's going to make Zerubbabel like a signet ring, what he's saying is that Zerubbabel will govern with his authority, with God's authority, with his authorization and authority. So here, Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, look to him, says Haggai, because he's living proof that royal line is still alive. That line that God promised a great king would come from is still alive. Those promises that God made in the past of that great kingdom to come, those promises are still alive. Those promises about what would happen to God's enemies in the future, that as we read in verses 21 and 22, that they would be overthrown and destroyed and their chariots and horses destroyed. Those promises are alive. Zerubbabel is living proof that those promises still stand. Whatever else is going on around them in the world, those promises still stand. So the people look to Zerubbabel to find encouragement to keep building. The good news of Zerubbabel. But I know what you're thinking at this point. You're thinking, Adam, that story you told at the beginning, was that based on a true story? I'm not going to answer that question. But you're also possibly thinking, Adam, this Zerubbabel you've talked about is dead. And he never became king. Not even over a little bit. Certainly not over everything. And the people didn't see the defeats of the nations and chariots and riders being overthrown. And that's true. That didn't happen to Zerubbabel or under his reign. Because Zerubbabel was only ever a kind of a placeholder with a very limited God-given role in his plan. Preparing the way for a greater one who would come. And when you get to the New Testament and you read the first page, you get another list of names in Matthew chapter 1. And in that list of names, you'll find David, you'll find Shealtiel, you'll find Zerubbabel. Then at the end, you'll find it all leads, can you guess, to Jesus. That there is Jesus in that royal line of David from Zerubbabel. The one who has come as a greater servant to be that greater king. And so, having seen the good news of Zerubbabel, maybe now we can think a bit about the great news of that greater one, the great news of Jesus, and what his coming means. Because if we want proof that God's promises are still alive, we can do better than just looking to Zerubbabel. We can look to Jesus. Now, when you first look to Jesus, when he comes to this earth, as he did 2,000 years ago, and you could still ask the question, is God really in control here? And there were points where his disciples asked that kind of question, because here was the one who had come from God. He seemed to have authority, and yet he wasn't using it to overthrow enemies or chariots and rulers or anything like that. He didn't overthrow nations. The only things he overthrew were some tables in the temple. And God's people remained under another human authority, not with a king established over them that was their own. And then this Jesus ended up being killed, executed unjustly. It was a miscarriage of justice, and he died on the cross. And you could look at Jesus in the tomb after his death and think back to Haggai chapter 2. What happened to all of the shaking? What happened to the shaking of the heavens and the earth? What happened to the overthrowing? What happened to the signet ring? And the answer to what happened is that 3 days later, Jesus rose from the dead. And as Paul tells us in Philippians chapter 2, that being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name, so that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord, to the glory of God the Father. Here we see Jesus as God's chosen servant, in the line of David, in the line of Zerubbabel, God's chosen servant, having died, and then being made like a signet ring, being placed in that position of power and authority and honour and glory, lifted up to God's right hand, that place of honour. And one day, this Jesus will return. The glorious day that we've sung about, this Jesus will return, and on that day every knee will bow, some to enjoy his reign of peace, some, as we read about in Haggai chapter 2, to be overthrown and subdued, and everything shaken into its proper place under the rule of King Jesus, the one chosen servant, who is now given the name above every name at the right hand of his Father. So today, we do more than just looking to Zerubbabel. We can look to Jesus, seated at the right hand of his Father, living proof that God does have everything under control, living proof that those promises do still stand, living proof that everything one day will be made right. For one day we will be able to see that God has had everything under control all along, even through pandemics and injustice and abuse and persecution. That one day there will be a kingdom where there'll be no more opposition to God, no more disobedience, no more rebellion, no more resistance to God's purposes, no more sin, no more of the fruit of sin either, no more death. Not even any sickness or tears or sadness or pain. Full justice as an answer to all of the injustice that we can see around us now. And all hostile forces being brought to account, including those who have violently opposed the church, God's people. One day we'll see that. And however things seem around us now, pandemics, injustice, abuse, persecution, we can look to Jesus and see that yes, God does have things under control. Yes, those promises still stand. Yes, everything will be made right. Just as the people in Haggai chapter 2 looked to Zerubbabel, so we can look to the greater one, Jesus. So look to Jesus. And it may be that some of us today who are joining the service need to look to Jesus for the first time. It may be that you've been joining these five services going through Haggai, and you've heard about this future that's coming, this glorious future, these promises about a glorious, perfect kingdom of peace. And you like the idea of that perfect kingdom of peace. It's important to realise that the only way into that kingdom is through the King, King Jesus. That if we reject the King, we won't be welcomed into the kingdom. We'll be one of the ones who are shut out and overthrown and destroyed. And in fact, that's what all of us deserve, based on how we've lived, that all of us in different ways have rejected the King, King Jesus. That we've wanted to live as if we're king of our lives rather than King Jesus, to do things our own way rather than what he would like. That's the sin that we deserve to be punished for, shut out of this King's kingdom. But then the Bible shows us that good news of Jesus, who stepped down into this world, into this darkness, and then died on the cross for his people, dying to deal with our sin, taking that punishment himself, so that now we can come to him and ask for his forgiveness, ask that he would make us new, and he'll welcome us into his kingdom, to enjoy life with him as king now. And then on the day when he comes back, we'll enjoy that perfect eternal peace. If we continue to reject him, then on that day when he comes back, we'll be forced to bow. We'll be forced to recognise that he is Lord. We won't be able to ignore it or pretend it's not true anymore. But we can come to him, ask him to forgive us and to welcome us into his kingdom. Maybe that some of us need to look to Jesus for the first time today. And if you're someone who knows what it means to look to Jesus, then we need to keep looking to him. With everything that goes on around us, when we see those things that make us ask questions about how God is working and how he's in control, and we see pandemics and injustice and abuse, and we see persecution, we look to Jesus. We look to Jesus at God's right hand, the one who died and is risen and who's coming soon. We look to him and we find reassurance that yes, God does have it all under control. Yes, that final day is coming. Yes, whatever's going on around us, those promises still stand. Jesus is living proof of it. And as we look to Jesus ourselves, it's also important that we keep pointing each other to him as well. That's part of how we can grow together and build each other up as a church. We keep pointing each other to this Jesus who is alive and is coming soon, this one who guarantees all our promises. We think about the people that we may be in contact with in the next week who know Jesus. How can we point each other to him to remind each other of this good news? Whatever reason you have for being in touch with someone, whether you just want to see how someone is, or maybe you want to wish someone a happy birthday, or maybe you're in contact with Caroline about Messy Church, or contacting Mike to let him know that you're coming to the service next week, or maybe you just phoned someone by mistake and you meant to phone someone else. Whatever reason you end up speaking to someone this week, can we take opportunities to point each other to Jesus and to remind each other that he is living proof that God's promises stand, that one day he's coming, glorious day. Throughout this Haggai series, we've been asking essentially the question, where do we find the confidence to keep building, to keep building together, growing together, serving together as a church? Where do we find that confidence when the circumstances around us can be so discouraging, when the future is so uncertain as it is at the moment, where can we find that confidence? At the end of the prophecy, the answer we're given is to look to God's chosen servant, to look to Jesus, to look to the one who died, rose again, who's seated at God's right hand, who's coming soon, to look to him, to keep building for the future, looking ahead to that eternity under the rule of God's perfect King. Let's pray.